It is really a delight for me to be able to introduce Patrick Kiefert to you. I think most of you already know him. He has had a long, busy, engaging day in many of the classes. And so many of you have come to me and told you how much you have learned from him today. And his spirit is very much like our spirit, and he fits in. There's a lot that I could tell you about. Dr. Kiefert did his PhD at University of Chicago, did his doctoral thesis on Paul Ricoeur, teaches at Luther Theological Seminary, is the founder of Church Innovations, works with the Elenon Center, works around the world, is very, very active in the emerging church. He and Brian McLaren are doing a number of different things together, and it's just my personal delight to present to you our good friend, Patrick Kiefert.
When you invited me, I said, sure, I'll come. But today, I have had a delightful experience from the top of the morning to the last hour. And let me tell you some of the things I've seen, because it's sometimes important to have outsiders who don't know any better tell you what they see. You, of course, will know lots of things about what's going on here. I will not know, okay? But and maybe I will tell you things you already know, but it was really a beautiful thing for me to see, and I want to say some of the things I saw. First of all, I saw a group of people having fun and delighting in learning and being with one another. While working, really working hard, I saw no one not fully engaged. You know, one of the first rules of teaching is time on task. I mean, students can't learn unless they put time on task, and frankly, almost none of that's in the hands of a teacher, right? And so you learn to watch the body language of people, and you see the body language of each of those classes, this incredible, intense time on task engagement with whatever was going on in the class. You know, to a teacher, this is, platinum. This is, you know, what you pray for. This is what you're looking for is a classroom where, you know, everyone has taken on the responsibility of learning so that we're a learning community together. And I saw that happening here in a kind of consistency. I work with lots of seminaries. I'm a consultant who works with lots of seminaries. Believe me, I do not see that as often as I wish. I don't see it in my classroom as often as I wish. I'm always really happy if I can get 80 to 85%, you know, awake, alert, and maybe pretending they read the book. I don't give my students enough credit. I have very good students at Luther Seminary. But they don't read as much as I expect them to. I heard teachers who have deep differences with one another and who seem to be blithely uninterested in pursuing them because they're so excited about what they share. Just very interesting to me. You see, because of course, you get a serious intellectual, anyone who actually thinks about life, and they're apt to have a different viewpoint than the next person who does that, right? And if they're fairly thoughtful, they'll be able to give an argument for their position, which makes them somewhat stubborn and, you know, about changing their mind because they have one to change. You know, most people just live with opinions. And it's really easy to change an opinion because it has no mind. But if you've got a mind, then it's hard to change because it's got reasons for how it got to where it's at. And these are people, these teachers, are people who have minds, and they have come to positions which they hold through a hard journey. These are not easily won conclusions they're teaching. And thus this is not trivial differences, right? I mean, I could get a fight going in every one of those class periods easily. It's one of my gifts, incidentally. But the teachers seem blithely uninterested. Not unaware. Bright enough to know there are these differences, but they're so excited about what people, what you share, and the shared work you have, these differences seem really quite secondary. And this is very interesting. You need to pursue that. Why is it that you've been able to create a community in which there are real differences, not trivial differences, differences worth having a fight over, and ask me, I'll come and help you. Specialize in conflict and mission. But you don't do it. Very interesting. Very interesting. Now, you could say maybe you're just not together long enough to talk about the differences. That could be part of it. You only gather for short periods of time, but it's very interesting. Third thing I saw. You are learning, you are giving respect to practitioners as serious theologians. You have to understand, in most of the theological education world in which I work, there is kind of an implied assumption, well, they're practitioners. God bless them, you know we need them to keep the church running, but they, and you know, and at one time maybe they were suitable for serious theological reflection, but those days are now gone. You know, they're so busy, you know, being practical, a word often used with some derision, that they're not worthy of being treated as serious theologians, of being capable of serious theological reflection. I saw in every single class practitioners, without apology, being invited to do hard theological reflection upon their experience and being honored as persons who do so. That's a big deal. It's a huge deal, way more important than I saw anyone here seeming to notice. Now, maybe that's good. You shouldn't know how good you are and how important what you're doing is, but this is, the church so desperately needs this kind of community that takes so seriously the practical action of the church that it makes those who do this worthy of critical reflection, so that these two things aren't divided from one another. The usual pattern in theological education since the Enlightenment has been to come up with the best theory you can get, and then you give it, you know, you kind of, the really great minds, you know, Wolfhart Pannenberg or Karl Barth, or, you know, notice I'm naming Germans. What's this? Anyway, you know, really great minds. I'm sure there's an American in there somewhere, but right now it's just not coming to mind, you understand. They wholesale their great theological ideas to their students who go out into the theological schools and you know, wholesale it to their students who will go out and retail it to the laity as if theology is another consumer item to be bought or not. That's how deeply lost in modernity theological education is, huh? And the production of theology. And the loss of the sense that the primal location of theological education is the local church. Always has been, always will be. And that everything else in the church's system is there to serve. Now, I think as a theologian, my job is to do theology in, with, under, for, and against the local church. Sure, there's a point where you have to have critical reflection over against the church, but it's with the church you're doing this. You're not trying to sell them your greatest, best idea. You see how vastly different that is. I see an entire learning community here that doesn't even play that game and instead is creating a new economy, a new ordering of the house of the church's business of doing theology. This is a big deal. If successful, and I think you are and will become so, more so, and will be copied the moment it can be done, and someone can turn a profit, that's, of course, a big question. It will be copied in America, at least. You are sitting on the top of a revolution in theological education. Really, that's what I saw today. Another thing I saw today, as if those things weren't enough, was a kind of ecumenism that is a church, a theology that takes all comers for the sake of the world, because remember, the oikumene is the world, right, the economy of the world. The church for the world is what it is to be ecumenical. A kind of ecumenism that on the one hand was respectful of the traditions represented in the room. I never heard a dissing of tradition. You understand, one of the great moves in a lot of ecumenism is to trivialize tradition and to say, well, none of those things count. No, I didn't hear that happening. And I have a big nose for that, do you understand? Because I get really irritated when someone says, oh, yeah, sure, I don't have any problems. You're a Lutheran as long as it doesn't make any difference to you. Now, sure, I can get along with that ecumenism. I give up my difference and we pretend like there aren't any differences. You know, hogwash. Believe me, just scratch me and you'll discover there's a difference. But no. What I heard was a recognition that those things are a part of a mixture about the relationship between worship and mission, the intensity of the commitment to the catechumenate, because it is for the sake of the world. Proving that there is a possibility for a new way of constructing the ecumenical movement around these issues. One of the people who's really influenced me in my life, Leslie Newbegin, argued that if we were to reframe the ecumenical movement now around missional issues, and we were to reframe it not as an ecclesial issue, but as God's mission, we could get rid of most of the problems without erasing difference among the churches. I saw that happening here. Okay? I saw that happening. I cannot help but Leslie Newbegin would have delighted in what he saw here today. And I would have danced a little Scottish jig. What do you expect of, you know, an Anglican bishop? We can't. A jig, I think. I think the last... I could go on with this. I just want to tell you what I saw today. I was prepared to come and just listen. And I can do that. But it was not possible for me. And why? Because there was something inviting in the format of how the teachers and students interacted that just said, go ahead, wade in. They'll be irritated, but not too. And it's okay. It's okay. Something very interesting. I've got lots of questions to ask Bob Weber about how he chose faculty. I'm not going to say as much about faculty as I'd like. Because I want to hear Bob and faculty and students tell me, how do you gather this sort of group of people? It's an interesting group of teachers. I saw exemplary team teaching. I have team taught through all my time as a seminary professor. I know it takes more work to team teach than to solo teach by far, no matter what all the colleagues may think who only do solo teaching. If you really do it. I mean, if you just do tandem teaching, of course, you only have to give half the lectures. But if you're going to really team teach, and I saw the characteristics of team teaching, this is a high virtue and hard won achievement. Big deal. The reasons for that are multiple. If you want me to talk about that, I'll talk about why team teaching is so critical in the formation of leaders in the church. But I won't go any further than that. I heard today further musicians, church musicians, thinking theologically and feeling free to do so without afraid that some theologian or some MDiv student or MA student in theology was going to shame them because they didn't have the right answer or they didn't say it the right way, or they hadn't read the right German theologian, or whichever. All those things I think important, incidentally. But you created a free space, and for over 20 years, I've tried to create that space where pastors and musicians can talk to one another in healthy, freeing, creative ways. And you know, it's very rare in the church, sadly. So rare in the church. And so I was so deeply moved by seeing it happen. And I thank God for the fact that it's happening and that I got to witness it. And may your number multiply, because the church so desperately needs the leadership, the pastoral leadership of its musicians. And we don't have that because I think we've been lording us, speaking now as a priest, as a pastor, we have tended to lord it over our other fellow ministers, for which I am deeply ashamed. And it is my fault, my own most grievous fault, and repent for it. But it is so beautiful to see an alternative working. It's a beautiful thing. Thanks.